Well, that's the beauty of the fractional CFO model, right? Is that we're working with dozens and dozens of companies, and there's a bench of other highly skilled CFOs that you are in relationship with. And so oftentimes you're learning and you're sharing strategies that otherwise, if you were in a vacuum as an internal CFO, you may miss.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy and I am the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Chris May from Quadrant. Chris has wide experience in building up a fractional CFO business, as is our want to have to talk about on this podcast. We're also going to hit on some exciting topics like working capital management, my favorite topic. We're going to have a nice case study about what it's like to run a business in the political consulting arena. And then finally up, we're going to talk about what it's like to do an acquisition for your own firm if you are a fractional CFO. So let's dive in. Chris, why don't you introduce yourself by telling us something about you that not many people know?
Yeah. Hey, James. Great to be here. Thanks for having me. Excited to share some of these lessons and hopefully add some value to your audience. I'm the founder and CEO of Quadrant Advisory. We are a US-based outsourced accounting and fractional CFO firm servicing, you know, growth stage businesses primarily. And as far as your question is concerned, I love the outdoors. I like to fish. That I grew up in southern United States on the water, fishing with my father. And so I have fished in 7 different countries around the world and had the opportunity in one of those while in Costa Rica to catch a 500-pound blue marlin.
Insane. So I take it that's fishing off the back of a boat in the ocean. Is that right? You can't do that in the river.
Correct. Yeah, that's about 80 to 90 miles offshore on the Pacific coast of Costa Rica on the back of what's called a sport fisher, one of those big, you know, boats that the back is open and the poles are coming out the back and you're trawling. So
I don't do a lot of fishing, but my brother-in-law is an avid fisherman. And this deep sea fishing, as you call it, I think it gets surprisingly violent, according to him. Like he does it off down there in South Africa. And you think of fishing as a sort of sedentary sport, but it's kind of full contact when you're in the ocean. Is that how it runs?
It can be. Luckily, where I actually have a little bit of motion sickness, which is strange as a fisherman who likes to go out to sea. But so I avoid the trips where we're going that far out and the weather is going to be, you know, that violent. And so I can take it a little bit and take my mind off of it through the activity of fishing. But I don't want to be that extreme with it.
Yeah. Well, you have to come to Ireland sometime. We have awesome river fishing here. It's famous for it. My business partner, Richard, is recently reconverted back to fishing. So he's taking his dividends and spending way too much in it, in my opinion, on tackle. And I don't know how you can do this, but he seems to find ways to do it. So
it's an addiction.
Yeah. He actually has a little camera now that sticks on the end of his line so he can see the fish when it's coming. So
wow.
I've been sort of ribbing him a bit, say, well, why don't you just stay at home and have a robot throw the ride in, you know, the line in for you? It'd cut out the middleman, but yeah, he's loving it.
That's great.
Okay, so let's get down to business here. Now, I don't just ask people off the street to be on the podcast because that'd be disastrous. We focus on finance experts, and you in particular have built up a successful CFO advisory firm. Why don't you tell us a bit about Quadrant and how you got started?
Sure. Yeah. My background is in finance. I was the CFO of a small business in Washington, D.C. before I launched Quadrant about 8 years ago now, and started my career thinking I was going to go to Wall Street and do the whole hedge fund investment management deal. And the timing of that was absolutely horrific. It was 2008, right around the Great Recession here in the United States. And so I actually worked at a hedge fund for about 6 months and the whole thing just blew up while I was there. And so I was unemployed for a period of time and just had my hat in my hand and got a job pivoting more towards corporate finance and learning how to be a CFO over several years, getting my MBA nights and weekends during that time period, and then eventually becoming the CFO of a small business. And it was there where, you know, I saw the need and had the thesis to launch Quadrant Advisory. You know, we're servicing growth stage companies, right? What we identify as 5 million in revenue to 50 million in revenue. They need to professionalize their accounting and finance function. They need to sort of graduate from your bookkeeper or founder-led accounting and finance. And that's where we come in, help take them to the next level, either as their entire accounting and finance apparatus, or they may have some folks internally, like a CFO or a controller or an accountant that works day to day, and we supplement and augment that internal team. So that's where we shine the most and can add the most value.
Okay. And the firm is roughly about 25 people, is that right? And where geographically are you serving?
Yeah, so we're a little bigger than that now, about 28. So since last time you and I spoke, we've brought a few new people on, which is exciting. We're a virtual business. The company was started in Washington, D.C. And during COVID, we went remote like so many other businesses. And, you know, it would actually serve as tailwinds for our company because a lot of potential clients became a lot more comfortable hiring people virtually, hiring people on a fractional basis. If they needed to cut costs internally, they turned to the fractional model. And so we've been operating as a remote company. A lot of our team and clients are still in the DC area simply because that's where the company was founded and relationships were formed at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But we have clients in most major metropolitan areas in the US.
I think that geographical basis, like a center point, is important. I meet a lot of folks who, you know, in theory, you can work from anywhere these days, which is true. But, you know, the fastest growing firms that I seem to see still have a lot of belly to belly element to at least getting started with things, you know, and some folks seem to make it look easy. They just live in Boston or New York or, you know, somewhere, a metropolitan area. And you're just living in those places opens you up to a lot of opportunity, even though we'd like to be, you know, maybe living on a hill somewhere in the wilderness, in your case, maybe, I'm not sure. I don't want to project too much. So before the show, we talked a little bit about when you're pet peeves. I don't know if you say pet peeves in America, but we say it over here, sort of, which is accountants pretending to be CFOs. And why do you think this happens? And where's the confusion arising?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think that conundrum or dynamic that you're mentioning is good for my business, but bad for the customer. And the reason I say that is because a lot of firms or people will say, I'm a fractional CFO. They will sell and market themselves as such. But really what they're doing is just managing the books, doing, you know, the monthly reconciliation and month-end close and issuing financials and very light strategy analysis, you know, business intelligence and forward thinking. And that's the difference, right? I like to think of the difference between accounting and finance on the paradigm of time, right? Accounting is the here and now and the historical. We're making sure that your financials have fidelity, that everything is done properly, and that the data therein makes sense and is actionable. The finance team and the fractional CFO is taking that information and telling the executive team and the stakeholders of the company the so what behind that. What can we do with these numbers? How can we make better decisions to grow the business? How can we allocate our free cash flow to get a return on that investment? If it's a startup that's managing burn, what are we looking at for our runway? When do we need to potentially go raise more capital? Things of that nature. And so that's the difference that I see between the two. And there are a lot of traditional accounting firms that focused on tax or audit and things of that nature historically that have stood up outsourced advisory and fractional CFO firms. And they do it for a lot of their clients, but I don't feel like they do it well because it's not their core competency. And or you have people who are marketing as a fractional CFO, but when you get in, you know, in an engagement with them, they're not really giving that high level strategic advisory that you were really looking for.
Okay. So as a civilian, let's say you're, you know, CEO or COO out there, you meet lots of people. You know, some people will say, yeah, listen, we do soup to nuts. We do your bookkeeping all the way to your M&A and your IPO if you want. And it's hard to tell because everyone says with the same confidence, yeah, we're a CFO, we have advisory, et cetera. It's hard to tell with confidence, like what the difference is. So what's your advice for shopping, if you like, for a CFO? What questions can you ask to really identify whether people have the right, you know, competence that you're talking about there?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of putting an exercise in front of people, right? Being open with some of your challenges or your financials and giving them that information and giving them a chance to give you some intelligent advice and feedback on that. Now, if they go back and they're only talking about the debits and the credits and the chart of accounts and, you know, some of the general ledger items that are happening, that's a big tell that they're less strategic and more tactical. If they are thinking forward, decisions that can be made, how can you, you know, leverage certain aspects or assets within your business in order to help it grow? that's going to be a tell for more of a strategic finance partner than a than accountant.
So, and then, well, okay, well, let me put bones on this. So frequently, you know, I get my tax done every year. That's why I'm not in jail right now. Mm-hmm. And then I'll meet a, say, fractional CFO and say, well, I'm going to give you a cash flow projection or an 18-month rolling cash flow projection or forecast, rather, I guess. Like, is that the job? Is that full level or is that still accounting? Because it's hard. How much should you ask? Is it good if I engage someone to give me a projection for 18 months, is that it or should I be expecting more?
That's part of it, but you should be expecting more, right? There should be some actionable insights that come from that. And right. One thing that I like to say too is that the CFOs will often inform you in things that you didn't know that you didn't know, right? And so you can ask questions about things that you might not know, but you don't even know what you might be missing out on asking. And so being proactive as opposed to reactive and putting some of those ideas and thoughts and analysis in tandem with the data and the forecast and the budgets and, you know, all the things that you're discussing, that's going to be the big difference maker.
Okay. So it's a Donald Rumsfeld question here. What are the, you should be, if your fractional CFO isn't bringing you stuff you didn't even realize at least every quarter, maybe that's a red flag.
Yeah. I think quarterly, possibly monthly, but depends on the type of business, the structure, the stakeholders. But, you know, a lot of our CFOs are actually sitting in on board meetings and, you know, wearing that hat and speaking to the numbers and being that thought partner, not just with the management of the companies and the organizations we support, but with other board members as well.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Well, okay. So we've touched on, you know, what are some of the other things that what Quadrant can help with? Like, so you specifically, you have a strategy, I don't know, but you don't do the bookkeeping. You've decided that as a firm, you're not doing that. I guess that keeps it clear as to differentiate what you should focus on.
I'd like to caveat that we do some bookkeeping work, but it's not our core competency or business. But we do some bookkeeping work for clients who require it in order for it to help feed and give fidelity to the advisory and CFO work that we're doing. So we don't not do bookkeeping, but it's not the core business. And we only take it on for a certain segment of the market. We're not going to do the most basic nascent business cash, small business bookkeeping at Quadrant.
So in a scenario maybe where there was no bookkeeper or it was garbage in, garbage out situation, you weren't confident in the books, you might take them over. But really, right. People are not coming to you for bookkeeping. They're coming for because, well, that's a good question, right? So if they don't know what they don't know, what are they coming to you for? Are they like, well, I've heard having a CFO is surprising and useful. Well, what's the most common driver that people could drive people to your door?
Yeah, I mean, there's a pain point of some sort, right? And if it's we actually take on a lot of clients where their financial systems and accounting is broken, and they right. know it. They just can't put their thumb on what it is, right? They know that they're not getting the right data. They're not getting the right business intelligence and numbers, but they don't know how to fix it or why it's those errors are being driven. And so we oftentimes will do historical cleanups and completely, you know, re-engineer how the accounting and finance function is working for companies. That takes some time and patience, and we get to know the companies inside and out. And that is where we can come in and do bookkeeping, right? But it is in tandem with this is being set up with a purpose, with an end goal in mind of making this more valuable than just a set of books.
Mm, yeah. I guess for me personally, it was, you know, am I using my management account? First of all, are there management accounts, I guess, right? Monthly management accounts. Secondly, am I actually using them in my business? If I'm not, that's a tell that I'm not getting value from my service provider because A, maybe I'm too embarrassed to say I don't understand parts of them. And B, maybe they're not formatted for the type of business that I have, right? Because when you start as a brand new business, you get the standard chart of accounts that everyone else gets. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good enough and you're a rinky-dink business at the beginning, so no one cares. And then over time, you're stuck with that. And then you're still just getting the accounts, looking at the bottom line and hoping the tax is paid and moving on, right? So, okay. And one of the things you do is I'm going to ask some. So I feel like once you get your first fractional CFO, you can finally ask those questions you were too embarrassed to ask the bookkeeper before because you make it sound so basic. So I'm going to use this live podcast in front of at least 3 or 4 people to get some of those questions off my back.
Let's do it.
So one of them, what's a sensitivity analysis? Why should I care?
Yeah, so sensitivity analysis, you are you know, you're thinking about different changes that you can make within the business, whether it's product related or pricing related or customer segment, ideal client profile, how you manage your cost of goods sold, your labor force, all of those different drivers of your financials. And then you're just running a handful of different scenarios in order to see how things would change if you were to make decision A, B, C, D, or E, right? Any of those different types of changes that could come into play is going to affect your business in one way, shape, or form. And by running all those various scenarios and seeing the sensitivity of those changes to how it affects your business is going to help inform decision-making at the company level.
And the output of that, do I get like, you know, two or three cash flow projections with different, like with different currency levels or different whatever you're testing for, I guess? Or I guess you're looking at the risks in the business. That sounds like it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, all this, there's nuance to this for most businesses, right? There's not a cut and dry way to do these types of analysis for businesses. And so it comes down to, again, the modeling, the financial modeling, and the aptitude that the CFO has in order to model correctly and then to explain it properly. That's another big thing with how we operate at Quadrant, and what we strive to do is explaining the why behind all of the things, because we as finance people can get very technical and have all these things in our brain. But then when you're dealing with an entrepreneur who's in a different field altogether and doesn't have financial or accounting training, you have to be able to articulate your story and what you're trying to say in a way that lands. And so that's such an important part. So yeah, when you're doing the financial modeling and you can walk through the numbers with them and you can walk through the various analyses and outcomes therein from certain decisions, being able to explain it to a five-year-old, right? As they say, if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, you're not doing a good job. And that's really difficult to distill, you know, very complex information at that level. But the better you can get at that, the more it will land with your customers and be impactful.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So it could be spreadsheets. It could be, an essay, I guess. It depends on, you're going to deliver the information in a way that the client can understand better according to what they need, right?
Yeah. Oftentimes it's a mix of financial models with a presentation of some sort, right? And whatever that presentation and the financial model go hand in hand. And that's how you're just, you know, sending the information and reviewing the information. Here's the hard data in the models so you can look at the numbers. Here's what all that means. And it's in a format that is more easily digestible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because sometimes you get like dumped a spreadsheet, right? And you say, here's the model and, you know, it's complex and it's whatever. But like, you know, it's different when you've been building it up from nothing for weeks and you understand the in and out and you can be very confident of it. You're seeing it for the first time with all these assumptions you don't even know. It's like, what the hell? You need that. You need that deck, or you need that help to drive the thing at least, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And oftentimes though, James, those are living, breathing documents. And so what's delivered in V1 is not V2, 3, and 4. And it's, you know, redone every quarter, every year as the business matures and changes and goes through various life cycles.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll do a shout out to friend of the podcast, Float up there, and we're friends with them. And, you know, they do a great job in helping with that, some of that where it's appropriate, I guess, you know, for user friendly as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. So here's another question, which is, you know, recently on the podcast, I had Patrick Arnold on and from Lloyd Associates, and he had a great story about how he freed up $1 million in profit for a customer by improving their working capital or reducing their working capital, you know, requirements. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's great. And afterwards I was like, what did that mean exactly? So what is working capital and how can I create all this extra profit out of thin air, seemingly, if you're able to reduce it?
Yeah. I mean, working capital at its most basis form is your current assets minus current liabilities, right? And so assets can be cash, inventory, receivables, liabilities, payables, debt, so on and so forth. And really, all you're trying to do is increase the delta between your assets and your liabilities. And that can be done in a couple different, you know, in many different ways, but, you know, renegotiating terms on your payables, renegotiating terms on your receivables. You want to, you know, collect money at a higher velocity than you pay money, right? And so the longer you can make that delta, the better for you, and the longer you're going to have your working capital at your disposal. There are also some other ways to manage some of your working capital needs around. We had a manufacturing business who had some working capital constraints. They were producing next generation radars and very capital intensive company in order to get their products out to market. And the state of Texas offered an economic development incentive to relocate their manufacturing facility from the Bay Area to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And in order to do so, we had to go through some audits and give a presentation and show the viability of the company therein. And we helped them. We shepherded them through that. We got them through 3 years of audits within 3 months, as well as putting together the presentation and helping. And that economic development incentive ended up being about $5 million of non-dilutive funding in order for this company to relocate some of its manufacturing facilities there. And that gave them a lot more runway, as well as, you know, not diluting the shareholders. And so there are other sort of ways, depending on what's happening in your environment, what kind of business you are, than just the tactical, you know, expand your assets, reduce your liabilities, hold on to your cash longer. There are some other tricks of the trade that just comes, you know, business by business, that, you know, as the CFO, we have to have our ear to the street on those sorts of opportunities.
Okay. So that's separate to managing working capital. Do we switch topics there? Like, you're getting grants, and are they related somehow, or is this a...
Well, it just adds to your war chest, right? It would allow you to, so I guess it is separate, but related.
Okay. All right. And I guess this is maybe an example. That's maybe an example of, you know, your CFO is looking for those opportunities and aware of them. Like, it's easy to work in your jurisdiction. I met a guy the other day who is, you know, doing some of their work in Australia because various incentives they have over there, even though they're operationally in the US. And, you know, there's all these blocking and tackling ideas, I guess, available. And if you're not working on keeping up to date with them, you won't know if they exist.
Yeah. And that comes into the analysis as well. As companies are growing and scaling, they don't stay in the same place. Look at all of your options and figure out if what you've been doing is the best thing for what you need to do and where you want to go. And the answer may be no.
And as a CFO, how do you keep up with this stuff? Is just like reading the Financial Times or?
Well, that's the beauty of the fractional CFO model, right? Is that we're working with dozens and dozens of companies, and there's a bench of other high functioning, highly skilled CFOs that you are in relationship with. And so oftentimes we're learning lessons in client A that we can apply to client C. And so when you have that network effect going on, and you're seeing a lot of action across different companies in different areas of the country with great CFOs that are on your team, oftentimes you're learning and you're sharing strategies that otherwise, if you were in a vacuum as an internal CFO, you may miss.
Okay. So we're just coming to the end. We've just come to the end of a political cycle in the US, I guess, and everyone's getting used to the new reality. And you have a story of a client, because there's a lot of money in elections everywhere in the world, I guess, these days, and significant businesses can be seemingly whipped up out of nowhere. And you have a case study of a client you helped, and they came from basically nothing, no controls by the sounds of it, but they were pretty significant. Maybe you could tell us more about that and how you helped them.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Here in the U.S., I mean, this last election, you know, it was north of $1 billion that was deployed for the election. And so, you know, with the roots of Quadrant being in Washington, D.C., and the company that I was a CFO at before I started Quadrant was also a political consulting firm. And so, you know, we have our fair share of experience in that. And so we were brought on about 18 months ago, maybe a little bit longer ago than that, with a company that specialized in marketing, outreach, media buying, political consulting for campaigns, and they were poised to do about $50 million during this year for the election. But all they had was their external tax team, which was basically one of the owner's personal tax people who did the firm taxes, and an internal CFO who was not even closing the books properly, had no AP systems, processes, or controls, was not recognizing revenue properly, or any of the basic things that needed to happen in order to make sure that the financials were sound. And so they brought us in to work with that CFO, and we've kept it all kosher and collaborative, if you will. And that in and of itself is threading a needle, but that's a different story. But,
we'll come back to that.
we found over $5 million that had been not appropriated, right? It wasn't nefarious or stealing or anything of that nature, but the numbers were so off that we had to go back and redo 2022 and 2023 tax returns. And because the revenue had been understated and the expenses had been overstated. And so their reportable net income was way lower than what it actually was. and the cash flow and all the metrics that these partners would have wanted and needed to see over the previous few years was just completely wrong. And so, you know, we cleaned that up for them. We got them in a much better place. Earlier this year, all of that happened. And so this year, when they had their big banner year, because it was a presidential election year in US, they were much more confident, and they're going to finish this year very strong and knowing their numbers. The other thing that it threw off was, you know, they based their partner distributions and things of that nature on faulty information. And so there were some high stress phone calls between the partners and the tax firm and our firm and the internal CFO working through this. And, you know, part of our job is to remain, keep everything copacetic, and we can't get emotional about it, but obviously this is their business. And so they might from time to time, but all we can do is show the data, talk about the data, and talk about solutions to make sure it doesn't happen again. And how do we rectify what we have?
Well, you said nothing was nefarious was going on, but I guess if you're the IRS, overstating your expenses and understating your revenue sounds slightly nefarious, and it could be a tricky situation.
Maybe negligence would be the better term, incompetence even, but it was not done, as far as we know, on purpose or with, you know, nefarious intent.
So how do you, well, now I said I'd circle back on dealing with an incumbent. Let's say you have someone in place, because this is where it gets tricky. You're paying someone, you maybe have a relationship, they might be on staff. They are saying the right things, or you're seeing balance sheet and income statement every month. And, you know, how are you supposed to know what the difference is? So how did you manage that? Is this a situation where you're bringing them in, you're bringing them out for lunch, you're trying to get to know them? What's your strategy for, as I see it, CFOs are much closer to diplomats than I thought they were, in that they got the information, which is fair enough, but now how they deliver it is where the art and science and where a lot of the value is. So when you came in, how long did it take you to figure out, well, something's seriously off here? And then what was your approach? Are you going to have, did you try and bring the accounting team along with you? Or did you just say, listen, you got to get rid of these guys? Or what was your strategy?
Yeah, so fortunately, the managing partner is who the main relationship was with us. And they had an inkling that something wasn't right, but they couldn't put their finger on it. And so that was our main stakeholder and point of contact. And so his CFO is who was ultimately responsible for the mess, let's call it. But our point of contact and who we reported to was the CFO's boss, the managing partner. And so how we would discuss and interact with the managing partner and tell them about our findings and tell them about what's going on versus, you know, more soft approach, diplomatic approach of how we interact with the CFO who was responsible for the mess, those were different, right? Those were different conversations. They were structured differently. And so we, to the managing partner, we were very clear and upfront with what we saw and what was going on. And he appreciated that candor. We were not beating around any bushes in that regard. But with the CFO, they're still there as of this moment. We have given some recommendations to the managing partner about that.
Okay.
Ultimately, it's their business to run. And you know, we're not trying to steamroll anybody. We're just trying to do our job. Now, if that CFO had been combative or not played nicely with us, which wasn't the case, they understood what was going on and took some responsibility and worked well with us. If that's not the case, then it can work out differently, right? Then there's a time and a place to raise the red flag and say, this is working or it's not working. And I've been in situations where it wasn't working. And if the managing partner, for instance, on this particular example, doesn't make a change, then we're going to bow out and not work on the account anymore, because therefore our business is, you know, what we're bringing to the table isn't as respected, and there's really no reason for us to be there. And so those situations come up from time to time, especially in those engagements where we're not the entire accounting and finance function, but we're plugging into an existing one, and you have to navigate it. And it comes down to, you know, emotional intelligence and communication.
And this is, I mean, from memory, $50 million business or that territory, significant. And they'd never had to have an audit, or just hadn't had one, or had been done and this wasn't picked up. What happened?
It was a privately held business. And so there was no mandate for them to have an internal audit. And luckily, the IRS had never performed an external audit. So there was, that had never been done. And we came in and didn't perform an audit per se, but we did look under every rock and make sure everything was kosher.
So It just occurred to me that there's a benefit here if you work with a CFO firm which is not signing off on your books. So maybe explain to me how it works here, because here in Ireland, your accountant's pretty much your watchdog, and he's got accountability to the state. You know, like if you see something nefarious, that's it. He's got to do something, or should do something about it. Do you carry that responsibility? Is there a difference between producing the books and any sort of regulatory what requirements that you have? Or if you come in separately as a CFO, does it give you an advantage to be able to give advice without having to take certain steps in a situation where there may be something to clean up?
Yeah, absolutely. We are not burdened by the regulatory requirements, right? Of course, we want to abide by best practices and the highest moral and ethical standards. But what we're doing is for management purposes. And oftentimes when we're producing financials, that's watermarked, right? For management purposes only. And it's data and business intelligence to help them make decisions. When you're talking about the regulatory and the compliance, oftentimes that's the tax firm. And unfortunately, in some instances, the tax firms just take what they're given from their clients at face value. If they're not hired or there's no mandate to go and investigate things further, they get the financial statements and they just do their thing for the K-1s and the annual tax returns. And so fortunately for us, we're more of a consulting firm with accounting and finance expertise than a regulated public accounting firm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I see the advantage there, because sometimes you want that third eye, if that's the right expression, too, which doesn't tie you up and means that you still have options if something's
And finance and accounting can be a bit of an art. You know, there is some gray area. Again, you want to uphold the highest best practices, morals, and ethical code, but there is some massaging of certain things that can be done and above board.
Okay. So pivoting a little bit to your practice and I guess your own investment decisions, you made an acquisition, which is sort of tangential, it feels like, to Quadrant. Tell us a bit about that and how'd you go about it and how's it worked out?
Yeah. So I mentioned at the top of the call, sort of our expertise and the ideal client for Quadrant. And we don't go, far downstream into the more basic bookkeeping work, and the smaller, more emerging businesses are not really where we operate. We were turning down a lot of business because of that. There was a lot of opportunity for those, emerging startups, small privately held companies, 1 to 5 to maybe 10 person shop. And we found a company called Less Accounting that we liked a lot that had a cloud bookkeeping offering. Right. It was more of a productized bookkeeping service, very straightforward, less accounting. That whole ethos is like accounting sucks, make it suck less. That's like the whole thing there. Right. Just taking the basic building blocks of accounting and bookkeeping off your plate. And so buying that about 3 years ago, we purchased it, allowed us to serve that customer that's downstream from Quadrant. And the thesis was that there would be some synergy there, so that less accounting, we would be able to send leads that we had from Quadrant that didn't fit in the less accounting. And then also less accounting clients, as they grew and matured, we would be able to move them over to Quadrant when they needed the higher level services. And so the other piece to this at Less Accounting is that it has a native software product. There is a product there. It is essentially QuickBooks Lite, right, is what we call it. It is QuickBooks without all of the bells and whistles, but when you don't need all the bells and whistles, you can come straight to, customer service or the owners, myself, and I have two partners there, when something's not going wrong, right? Whereas QuickBooks, you're with a chatbot for an hour before you might even get anywhere. And it's just so large and bureaucratic. And there's so much in that system and platform. If you just need to connect your bank and credit cards, set up some financial statements and reconcile them and have a nice interface and nice reports, that's all it does. And it does it really well. Same thing with the bookkeeping side. We're only doing, your basic month-end close bookkeeping work and delivering financials without any of the advisory side, which is what we do at Quadrant. And so keeping the main thing is what we call it, right? Like very simple, very narrow in our service and approach for both the software and the bookkeeping, but there is a market for that. And it's been a fun ride to work on a software product. As you know, that's your bread and butter. And as a service guy, learning the ropes of the software business, it is a different world. And it's been fun. And luckily I do have a business partner who has a technical background, and he helps on the that side of the business for Less Accounting.
How did you come across this acquisition? Was it part of a search, or was it an opportunity acquisition, or how did it come about?
Honestly, we weren't cultivating an acquisition actively, but me being ever the entrepreneur, I'm always looking for, you know, ways that I can expand, you know, what I'm working on that can help Quadrant or other interesting projects. And you're probably familiar with the website acquire.com. It used to be called Micro Acquire. And so I would look through that periodically, and this struck my fancy. And so, you know, we got under LOI and did our due diligence, liked what we saw, and it just worked out. But it wasn't something that was formally premeditated, but you know, with me just constantly looking around and seeing what's out there, it fortuitously came together.
This was 3 years ago. So without going into detail too much, but 3 years ago, the SaaS landscape was extremely frothy. And you had like small businesses going for 10 or 15 times revenue, sometimes not even EBITDA. The process, how did you avoid overpaying? Let's put it that way, because that was very possible at that time. Because at that time also, there would have been a lot of offers, I'm imagining, for a business like that, sort of at that moment. How did you make an offer that stood out without paying too much?
Yeah, so I think there was a lot of good luck involved. The seller had somewhat of a distressed situation on the personal side, and that's why he was selling it. The business is a pretty small business, right? So relatively speaking, it's, you know, six-figure revenue business. It is not, right, you know, not very large. And so the multiples were much lower, and we were able to negotiate, you know, basically because the service arm and the SaaS arm, it wasn't pure software. And so the services segment is valued much lower. And then, so we came to four times revenue on the software and one times revenue on the service. And when you blend that multiple, that's what we came to. And so we felt like that was a very good deal for us.
That seems fair. That sounds good for a business that size. I'm sure the owner was very happy. It's a good exit for him. And yeah, obviously it's a good business for you. In one word, was it a good or a bad idea?
To be determined.
Okay, that was more than one, but we'll check back in maybe. We'll see. I can read the tea
leaves. I'm not ready to say it hasn't exploded. And we have had some cross-pollination, which was our thesis, but to the degree that we initially anticipated, that has not come to fruition. So,
yeah. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, before I ask you the final question, the business hero question, I'm going to ask you, how can people get in touch with you if they like what they've heard today and they want to see if it's a good fit for Quadrant to work with you?
Sure. Yeah. Our website's the best place to find us. So at www.wearequadrant.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Chris May/CFO. And so that's how you can find my LinkedIn profile. And, you know, we love to talk to entrepreneurs, small business owners that are in that transition of needing to professionalize their accounting and finance function, looking for that higher level strategic advisory work. We'd love to talk to those folks and learn about your business and how we can add value to you.
I love that LinkedIn slogan. It's like the equivalent to getting CFO tattooed on your face. Like, okay, committed. You've committed to this role.
That's right.
All right. So to wrap it up, tell me, who is your business hero and why?
Yeah, there's a guy named Naval Ravikant who is sort of like a tech luminary, if you will. And I'm not a tech guy, obviously, but his entire ethos is something that really inspires me. There's a book called The Almanac of Naval, not written by him, but written about him, that I think that I try to read every single year. You know, just his approach to business and life and how those two can mesh, because we all know, you know, we have families and we have activities and things outside of work, and trying our best to not bring home some of the things that happen at work, that's a challenge for a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners. And he brings a lot of things in from stoicism and sort of that discipline that comes from thinking about things through the eyes of like Marcus Aurelius and, you know, those types of folks. And it's done a lot of good for me on thinking about how to run the business, how to deal with people, emotional intelligence, and, you know, how to think about growth and how this entire thing that we do in business affects us personally and our lives as humans.
Very good. I'll look that up. The Almanac of Naval. I haven't read it. It's interesting. He's one of these guys I've heard referenced more than I've heard talk. He's like low key reference talk. Everyone else talks about him, but yeah, that's so typical that he has someone else write the book about him rather than doing it himself. Great recommendation. Thanks very much. And thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, congratulations. Your special reward is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/partners. I've got a webinar there and explains how fractional CFOs can work with Procurement Express. And also it has my take on how fractional CFOs can better explain their value in a way that CEOs understand. So procurementexpress.com/partners. Chris, this has been a fun chat. Thank you very much for coming along today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.